Jackson.
Father! Oh, Baba, you mustn't die. You mustn't. Who can help me? Yes, the kings. The kings are wise. They will be able to save Baba.
Please, I've got to get inside to see the kings. You must let me through.
And when Aaron came to the entrance of the stable, he could hardly believe what he saw. And she brought forth her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling clothes and laid him in a manger because there was no room for them in the inn.
Oh, Your Majesty, you must...
Oh, the player boy.
My lamb has been injured. You must save him.
He is near death. Oh, lad, there is nothing I can do.
But you are a king.
A mortal king only. But there is a king among kings who would save your little friend.
The babe? But I do not understand.
It is not necessary that you understand. Go to him.
But I have no gift to bring.
Go. Look upon the newborn king. And as Aaron looked at the babe, he thought it was the most beautiful sight he had ever seen.
And yet, there is something more about him. So much more.
Your gift, little drummer boy, given out of the simple desperation of a pure love, is the one favored above all. See?
Aaron's heart was filled with joy and love. And he knew at last that the hate he had carried there was wrong, as all hatred will ever be wrong. For more powerful, more beautiful by far than all the eons of sadness and cruelty and desolation which had come before, was that one tiny, crystalline second of laughter. Blessed are the pure in heart. For they shall see God.
JH Experience with co-host Dolly Miller-Brennan.
Produced by CommunicationCreations.com.
And now your host, the notorious MJH.
Friday, December the 10th, 2010. Adult themes are present in the news you missed this morning. Parents are strongly cautioned.
Good morning.
In the headlines this week, former WikiLeaks founder arrested for DickyLeaks. Julian Assange. The man behind WikiLeaks was arrested this week after a woman that he had unprotected sex with complained to authorities that his refusal to use a condom was something of an assault to her.
Huh.
This is a weird deal. Assange, being held in London and caressed lightly, is threatening to release the password to a computer file he calls his insurance policy. However, authorities say that they have already cracked that file, which is believed to contain a picture of 70s acting icon Eric Estrada and the words, "You're gay." Can you imagine? As a side note to the story, hackers reacted to Assange's arrest by taking down websites for MasterCard, Visa, and PayPal yesterday, leaving Julian Assange to try and make bail using Facebook credits. President Obama this week appeared on the TV show Mythbusters. The president held up a copy of his approval ratings in a segment entitled Myth Busted. Apparently, you can go back. Ow! Musician Tommy Lee this week lashed out at SeaWorld, claiming that their whale breeding program relies on artificial insemination using semen obtained by trainers who employ a water-filled cow's vagina. SeaWorld says not so. They say their methods of gathering whale essence are not unlike that of any animal breeding program, but Tommy Lee insists that he is right, saying that he recognizes the apparatus because it's just like the one that he requires. That dude is equipped. Speaking of animals, a new anti-alcohol campaign in Russia features an animated squirrel and has become a huge hit with more than 1 million views online, mostly by lonely, drunken Russians on Friday nights. And finally this morning, Al-Qaeda is looking for a few new recruits on Facebook. Authorities say that this could soon lead to a rash of virtual suicide bombings by people who, in reality, rarely ever leave the house. Hey, I can only wage jihad until 10 o'clock and then I have to do my math. But thanks a lot, you guys. Authorities do caution, however, that Al-Qaeda could booby-trap all of Farmville.
No.
Yes. IEDs near the silo. Be careful. Every week, stories from around the world make up the news, but so does this guy. For the news you missed here on FM 99, I'm Rick Rumble.
You are listening to the MJH Experience on Blog Talk Radio.
Trying to kind of having trouble getting people lined up on the phones. So I called in on my cell phone to make sure things were working from the listener's end, the caller's end. And if I put it on speakerphone, it creates this cool little echo. Okay, so everything seems to be working fine now. All right, let's get started with the show. We've got we got Larry Ballard on here tonight. Larry Ballard's author of the book Modern Slavery and the Fight for Freedom, which is available on Amazon.com. The links are here on our Blog Talk Radio page at blogtalkradio.com/MJH. We're also here with Dolly Miller Brennan, our co-host. And Dolly Miller Brennan, well, hey, I don't tell everybody's business, but I'm going to tell this. With the past few shows we've done with Larry Ballard, Larry Ballard's been talking about all sorts of stuff, I can't even go into it all. He's got this book right here, and he actually sent me a copy. He autographed it and everything, and he's gone through a lot of the topics in this book on the show already, just touching down, not to give too much away, because he still wants you to buy his book. You hear that? It's a good book. Buy it. Read it. I'm reading it right now. And he's gone through a lot of this stuff, talking about, what's going on in the government, and I lack a better word, conspiracies, but, just things going on in the government that we should be aware of. And Dolly Miller Brennan keeps bugging them, saying, well, what do we do about it? What do we do about it? What do we do about it? Well, this week, Larry Ballard is going to address Dolly's questions and give us all some solutions on what to do about what's going on with this government, with this economy, with this administration, with this Congress and the new Congress coming up. What's going on and what to do about it? And who wants to start the show? I don't know. I'm going to turn it over to you guys. Everybody, this is our co-host, Dolly Miller Brennan, and our guest, author of Modern Slavery and the Fight for Freedom, Larry Ballard. Let's hear it, everybody, as soon as I can find the applause. You're not supposed to know that part. There we go. Larry Ballard, Dolly Miller Brennan.
Well, I'd like to turn it over to Larry right away because to look at some of these solutions, it's nothing simple. I know that. You can just go out and do 1, 2, 3 because I think we're looking at a series of administrations preceding this one. This one I think is a coup d'etat, but we're looking at a series of administrations preceding this one that has given us loose fiscal policies and printing money. And if we print money, it doesn't support the growth of the expanding economy. We don't have the capital, to support the growth of the expanding economy. So therefore, if we print money, we're not able to produce consumer goods. We're going to have a large trade deficit, and we're leading into an economic collapse. In the short term, when we print money, it's good for oil prices. But in the long term, we've got, as Larry would know, we've got the rise in property values, shift of productive manufacturing bases from Anglo-Saxon nations to low-cost Asian countries. The increase in money supply kind of results in the rapid growth of non-renewable resources and damage to the global environment. So we're looking at, I think, printing money. Anytime you see a nation printing money, such as we just did, printing money to pay its bills, without the economic base to sustain that printing of the money, you're in for economic collapse, and we may not be able to avoid it. And, Larry, what can we do?
Well, darling, as you know, you've asked me this question repeatedly, and I've dodged it. Let me tell you why I've dodged it. On the surface, what people want to hear me do is regurgitate a whole list of things they can do. And to those who want to hear that, what I'm going to tell you is you're going to have to wait to the end of the program. Because to tell you an individual thing or two or three or four or five that you have to do mean nothing if you don't understand the big picture. So I'd like to lay out what we need to talk about, and why I've dodged it is because it really requires a very comprehensive understanding. So I broke it down into five things, and then you can direct me and we'll go through them. If we don't understand our vision, then we're helpless. So basically, I'll go to a quote. Liberty cannot be preserved without general knowledge among the people. That's from John Adams. So basically, we've got to understand our history. We've got to understand what America's about and decide if we want America our founding fathers established or the America that we're seeing emerge now. So we can talk about that. That's topic number one. Topic number two, is they have a specific agenda to divide us and conquer us. So we have to talk about how do we counteract that division, and if and can we unite around a given vision, and can we be effective? Because part of the answer is if we're out there and we're pushing for solutions, but we're pushing for different solutions and we're not united around a common goal, we're not going to be successful. So to me, the whole idea is to win not the battle, but to win the war. And a part of understanding that is item number three. We've got to understand the government's agenda. They have a specific agenda. If we're going to push back against it, we've got to know what they're doing. We've got to be able to know it at such a level that we can anticipate it and we can be prepared, and we cannot let their false crises drag us in directions that we don't want to go. And then this is the really hard one. We finally got to understand this economy is going to collapse no matter what we do. And so with that knowledge, we've got to step back and say, our whole lives are going to change. We've got to take personal responsibility for our roles in getting this country to where it's at, and we've got to look at what we're willing to do personally to stand up and to turn it back into whatever it is that we decide we want. And then the last thing is what people really want me to start with, and that's just kind of a regurgitation of a whole bunch of the things that we can do, which in and of themselves don't work unless you understand the bigger picture. So where I'd like to start is basically on the vision. And I'll, see if you want to ask me some specific questions. If not, I can kind of give you, kind of an overview of the vision, if you will.
Okay, let's start with that then.
Okay. Basically, a big portion of this book is history, because people have to understand what it is that America is all about, what's it been about for the last 200-plus years, and now what's it morphing into, and which vision do we want? So I've just got a few little bullet points here to kind of define our founding fathers' vision of America compared to what we're morphing into. We were established as a republic based upon constitutional law, not upon majority rule. But now they're morphing us into a democracy, which is based upon majority rule, which our founding fathers used to call mobocracy, because basically what resulted was the people who had the least and were the least willing to work or the least productive were always trying to vote something for themselves, so mob rule. So do we want a constitutional rule, or do we want a democracy with mob rule? Are we willing to do what's in the best interest of the public, or are we looking at what's in our best interest? And is our Congress and our Senate representing us and the public interest, or are they representing special interests? And are we willing to be, and this is very important question for every person out there to ask themselves. We were based upon a society in which the people were ruggedly self-reliant, and we're being positioned by our government to be increasingly dependent upon them. So do we want to have a government that's so big that it can give us everything we want? I think not, because a government that big can also take away everything we have. So we have to look at this government of entitlements and say, boy, it's dangerous to depend on the government. And then we'll go into it in detail as to exactly what all that means. And another thing we have to recognize is this government was set up where the federal government had just a very few limited things that it controlled. And so part of the goal that this government now has set up, our new government, is that they have to take control away from the states where our founding fathers wanted it to be and put it in the hands of the federal government. And so basically that takes control away from the people. And so do we want state control, or do we want federal control? And then we've got moral virtues. They're trying to basically degrade us into a society that is amoral. And if we don't have moral virtues, we can't stand. Our founding fathers said that they didn't really set this government up based upon the laws of man, but based upon the laws of God. And so they're degrading our morality, because then that leaves us with no absolutes. And if we don't have absolutes, we don't have anything to rally around. And then basically what that government started out as was a government of liberty. And if we go in the direction that they're pushing us, we become a government that oppresses the people, and we become basically pushed into a dictatorship. And I don't think that's where we want to go. So basically what I'd encourage is that people need to get my book or somebody else's book, and they need to understand what our founding fathers established when they established America. And if they really believe in that, then they have a rallying point to rally around, which could take us to step number two, which is how do we keep them from dividing us. So before I go into that, do you have any redirects or any questions that you want to ask me on that or anything you want to add to it, Dolly?
What I'm thinking is when you're saying the taking responsibility, I think when we're contacting our representative and saying we want change, perhaps we're saying don't touch Social Security, don't touch unemployment, don't touch this. We're maybe looking at it in the wrong mode. We're going to have to take those cuts to be able to sustain ourselves as a nation and to become more self-reliant. There are no jobs. There are jobs. It may not be what you want. You may have to take two or three, but there are some jobs out there. And I don't want any hate mail. I got some last week on that. But nevertheless, they are out there. Now, if we're contacting our reps and saying, you got to stand up for Social Security, you got to stand up for Medicare, you got to stand up for Medicaid, well, we've reached the point with the elderly, we almost have to do that to a certain extent, but all these other entitlements, it looks as though we are reaching to the government for help, and what we should be doing is saying, we really don't need you that much, we're going to take care of ourselves, and we're going to let our states run themselves to an extent, and then you're saying you might have a federal oversight, but is that what you're saying, that you just want a federal oversight and we need to stop some of this entitlement base and be able to take the hit? Because we are going to take a hit. Ireland's just about to go down completely.
Well, no, I'm going to say it's far worse than that, but you've actually kind of walked into point two, because really it does revolve around the question that you just asked. And that's what divides us, and how can we be united? And that's the central issue. You just banked on it. Basically, what divides us is, have we become a group of people who no longer are self-reliant, but a group of people who are willing to turn over control of our lives, literally everything about our lives, to the government? And the central issue there is entitlement programs. And now here's where you don't want to hear what I have to say, where it's going to get into where we have to sit down and really, really look at ourselves and what we're all about. Mark my words, this government is going to collapse regardless. It's a matter of when it reforms, does it reform as a dictatorship, or does it reform back as a republic again? And that's going to depend on the American people and what they want, and to what degree they understand what's being done to them. But the central issue here, Dolly, is that when it collapses, it's not going to be this general step down like you just described, where we have the choice of selecting, well, we want this entitlement program, and oh, we got to keep Social Security, and we want this one. No, what's going to happen? What's happened in every society that I've studied in preparation for this book and the prior book that I wrote, is that when it collapses, they go into an absolutely opposite kind of a program where they cut literally all entitlement programs, and you've got huge amounts of people that are disengendered. What just happened in England, for example, is they're beginning to do that. They're farther progressed than we are. And so what happened? They used to have all kinds of aids for people to go to college, and now they're raising the tuitions doing away from the entitlement programs for education because the government's broke. We're going to see those kinds of things taken away systematically, and the people who've allowed themselves to become dependent on the government are going to be just in dire shapes. They're going to be the worst ones. So what that does is, what we have to really decide is, if it's going to collapse anyway, do we let them divide us based upon what I call the Democrats' platform, which says we want entitlements, 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 the Republican platform that says be more independent, but in reality both sides are playing us. What I think we have to understand is, when it collapses, all of us are on the same boat. So I guess the key thing here in terms of establishing a plan is, we can't let them divide us. It can't be Democrats versus Republicans, liberals versus conservatives, rich versus poor. We have to understand that the whole policy of redistribution of wealth, taking from the middle class and giving to the lower class, is going to break us. And then I have a real quick quote here for you. When people feel – no, that's not the one. Skip it. I can't find it. But basically, I'll just paraphrase it. When you take from people who have and give to people who don't, you're basically driving down society because you're taking from the most productive people and giving to the least productive. So as we've talked in the show before, there is a place to get that money, and it's by doing financial reform, which will take us into the specific things we do, and we take it by reforming the banking system so that we can no longer have predatory lending. It fixes the credit card issues, it fixes the mortgage issues, and it forces a redistribution of the money back from the banks back to the people. And that's where the real bulk of the money is. 1% of the wealthiest people in the world own more assets than 95% of the bottom of the economy, and that's the banks. And we can get some of that money back from them, and then we can stabilize this economy, because then we have money to grow our capital sector and to basically move forward. But if we keep going self-destructing ourselves with the middle class and lower class fighting each other, it's absolute destruction. Just absolute.
Now, how do we work toward banking reform? Because the banking reform that the government is promoting is not banking reform, it's banking takeover and control. So how do we work toward banking reform? How do we, and we have to probably do this through our representatives, and how do we get them to institute real banking reform, and what is real banking reform?
You've taken me to the end of the show, so I'm only going to answer this one question, and then I'll go backwards.
Okay.
But in terms of banking reform, you know, what they've done to us so far is the stimulus, which really wasn't banking reform. What that was a reward to the corrupt banking institutions. Basically, that was us being put in debt to, as we've talked on this show and all along, the financial elite that set up the top that are controlling everything. But here's a couple of real.
You're saying when they bailed out the banks, they gave them the money that we were making, the taxpayer money, as a benefit, and then we continued to grow in debt so the banks could keep their assets? Is that what you're saying?
Well, that and worse. For example, right now you've got, let's take Homeland Security, education, and health care. Each one of those, if you combine them all together, the interest on the national debt is 4 times greater than all 3 of those budget items combined. And every time they spend money we don't have, it puts us deeper and deeper and deeper in debt. So here's how we fix it. It's really quite simple. That's why I say you have to have the framework first. If you understand that at one point in time there were usury laws, controlled by what? The states. And then there was a court case, and the court case says, well, no, you can charge interest rates based upon the state in which you incorporated. So all the banks jumped on it, and they ran to the 6 states that didn't have usury laws, and all of a sudden our interest rates went up from 4, 5, 6, 7%, which is back in the 50s, to where now we're up in the 30s and the 40s and the 45%. And what that's done is that's taken all the available cash out of the private sector and pulled it away from the American people and given it to the banks. So what we have to do is, once we get control of the legislature, that's why it's a sequential process. Once we were to get control of the legislature, then what we have to do is it's real simple. You pass a national usury law, and you cap interest rates, and all of a sudden the banks can no longer have their predatory lending practices in regard to credit cards, because they can't charge 30 and 40 and 50%. Well, they don't get up to 50, but 30 and 40%. They have to go back to what the policies were in the 50s, and that is that you loaned money based upon your ability to repay. Where now what they do is they loan you money. Their best client is the guy who's least able to pay, who's going to go over on his limits every month, and who's not going to be able to ever pay his credit card off. So if we pass a national usury law, we fix that. And then the next thing we fix is we fix the mortgages. And there's a real simple way to do that as well. Right now there's lots of people who have 2 mortgages out there, a first mortgage and a second mortgage. But every time you refinance or every time you move, what happens is your mortgage starts over again. So if you had owned your house for 5 years, 80% of everything you paid in on your mortgage went to interest. All we have to do is change now, and that's assuming we've got control of the legislature now, and we've got the special interest groups out, the lobbyists are gone, and we purged our government, and we've gone back to state control, so a lot of things have to precede this before we would be able to do it. But once we're in position and we're down that list of things step by step, and we're now into the point where we're enacting some difficult things, then all we have to do is the mortgages then are in the name of the individual and not the property, so that if you buy a new home, all that happens is that if your mortgage went up, if the new house cost $10,000 more, your first mortgage remains in place. Say you were 20 years on your amortization table, that remains in place. Your interest rate remains in place. You take out a second mortgage on your new property for the difference, $10,000. That starts at year one on the amortization table, probably at a higher rate. But the net-net is now people aren't held hostage where they never can pay their houses off because the mortgages are always starting over, and where a quarter of a million dollar house costs you three times that by the time you get them paying it. So there are two key examples of very simple legislation that we can do in order to not take money from the middle class and give it to the lower class, but take money where it's really at from the banks and give it back to the people where it used to reside. And then we have money in our savings accounts, and we don't have to be dependent on Social Security. So it's a very involved process. That's why I kind
of avoided this
in the long run.
So what you're saying in one particular case is it has to come to the legislature. You have to make sure you have the right people in the legislature, and you have to get the usury law. You have to watch your credit card interest rates, and you have to watch your real estate mortgage rates. And those are two ways that everybody, no matter what their level of education is, can pay attention to that, pay attention to their candidate, and insist that these laws be changed. Rather than you've got to protect Social Security or Medicare, that's inconsequential to a point, because if you have these other laws in place, that won't be a concern. Is that correct?
Well, yes and no. What I'm saying is we don't have that level of control anymore. What I'm saying actually is that if I looked at 1929, if I looked at the Weimar Republic, if I looked at Argentina and all the places where we've had economic collapses, the United States is headed for an utter economic collapse. And when that happens, all those programs, all those entitlement programs we're talking about are gone. They're gone. We're not going to have a choice.
I'm not concerned with having entitlement programs. What I'm concerned with are the voting population. That seems to be all they think about is protecting that, and they need to move away from that and go into
what you say, concerned about usury and other issues. That's why I didn't want to get out of sequence, in a sense, because that's where we're talking about personal responsibility. What we have to basically own up to as a society is that we have made materialism our God, and as long as we try to hold on to our standard of living when it's not possible to hold on to it, then we're not going to be able to do the things we need to do to save what there is left to save. So we have to understand that we have to stop being materialistic. The next thing we have to understand is that the balance of power has already shifted, folks. It's basically we're no longer the world superpower. It's now China. And it's happened over the last 50 years where we've allowed our manufacturing to be gutted and where we've allowed the free trade system to flood us from China, so that basically people working in sweatshops were producing goods that we were buying, but at the same time it was costing us American jobs. And the end result is going to be that once we collapse, we're going to be the ones working in sweatshops, and our standard of living is going to fall dramatically. So basically,
we're going to have to hit bottom. We need to bring production back here.
The only way you do that is if you're willing to go back, and again, you have to understand your history. When America rose to the point of being the economic superpower of the world, it was at the end of the Civil War, when we had completed the Transcontinental Railroad system, when we understood that we were being downtrodden by the British free trade system from Britain, which is basically the same system now that's being imposed on us from China. And what we did is we imposed high tariffs to keep the British goods out. We turned inward in ourselves, and we basically developed our domestic markets, developed our manufacturing, and then once we had that base developed, We exported it. Now, we've done the exact opposite of that. We've given all of our manufacturing away, and we have no money to put into capital development. And so we have to go back. That's where the first step is. You've got to go through a book like mine and understand in detail, step by step by step, what they've done to us, because the answer is to undo it, but you've got to understand what they've done before you know how to systematically undo it. It has to be also done step by methodical step. You can't just jump to the end, because if you do, for example, you won't have the power. You've got to get the Republicans out, the Democrats in, new people in. You've got to all agree on a platform, and once your candidates agree and you've got a mass of the people standing united on a given platform, then you can force the changes you want. You get the lobbyists out, get the special interest group out, and then what's in the best interest of the people, that agenda of that 15 or 20 things that you're pushing for, has a chance to get pushed through, but not until we get some semblance of control over the government. And then not until we agree.
I think a lot of people simply aren't going to look at the history. They're not going to understand it, and they're not going to go into historical perspective. And they're going, I don't want any hate mail over it, but I think it's kind of go over a lot of people's heads, and they're simply not going to do it because they consider they can't. But they can still make sure that the usury laws get passed. Make sure that production is brought back. Make sure that some of these ideas in motion, because I don't think everybody's going to be able to understand the historical significance and go back and be able to do that. But say, okay, I want to elect someone that's going to put in a usury law. I want to elect someone that's going to do banking reform. They don't have to understand how it's done to a point if they get the right people in. Is that a solution? Because I think a lot of people are not going to understand it.
Well, first of all, in my book, I laid it out in a simple enough fashion that I think anybody with a sixth grade education can understand it. But here, let me try to simplify it for you. Let me try to jump to something that anybody can understand. But if you don't have at least this baseline, we're just done. Here's what we've got to minimally understand. I'm going to read you a quote, and then I'm going to give you 7 points that are crucial, because if you don't understand these 7 things, you can't develop any kind of meaningful strategy to counteract what the government's doing. So here's what we first got to understand. We got to understand what they're doing. There's a willful intent to collapse our economic system, to drive us into super capitalism and a super capitalist communist society. Now, here's the part that I want you to listen to very carefully, because this is what people have a hard time getting their heads around. Why would anybody want to drive us into a super capitalist economy? So listen to this carefully. If one understands that socialism is, quote, end quote, not a share-the-wealth program, but is in reality a method to consolidate and control the wealth, that's the key, then the seeming paradox of the super-rich men promoting socialism becomes no paradox at all. Instead, it becomes logical, even the perfect tool of power, seeking megalomaniacs. Communism, or more accurately, socialism, is not a movement of the downtrodden masses, but of the economic elite. So if we can understand that, that's the baseline.
I think that's a very good point, because there are a lot of people that are going to say, you know, I can't do this, I don't understand it, and they don't want to understand all of it. And I think this is a very good point that you just made. Okay, socialism, that's not a method to help you. It's a method to control wealth.
Yes, basically what's being done right now when they're redistributing the wealth is they are taking it step by step by step into socialism. Lenin, I don't have the quote in front of me, but Lenin said, for example, along these lines, I cannot expect the United States of America to wake up one day and decide to become socialist or communist, but what I can expect is that their leaders will little by little, bit by bit, walk them into socialism until one day they wake up and realize that they're communist. So with that, here's the key. Forget the history. If you think that's too complicated, here's the 7 things you've got to understand, or you can't participate in this system of government.
Okay, so
you've got
to understand the first point is for people to understand that redistribution of wealth is not to help you, but to control wealth, to keep it in the hands of the powerful elite. And so that seems
exactly
to be a point that you don't have, like you said, you don't have to have a lot of education. You can understand that.
So point by point, I'll run through them quick, and then, Dolly, if you want to ask me to elaborate on any of them, we'll do it. I'll kind of pause in between each one. Paramount, okay. Number one, absolutely most important, they have to make us dependent upon them. They have to make us literally, and we can go into this in detail, dependent for our very survival, for everything, for our food, for our energy, for our clothing, for our health care. If they can make us dependent on them for everything that constitutes survival, which is what they've been doing and what the Bush administration and the Obama administration have put in place over those two terms, over those two presidencies, their belief is that they can keep the people from rising against them because we'll be too afraid of what we'll lose. And so it comes right back to entitlement programs, and it comes right back to the fact that the more we let the government take care of us, the more that government is able to literally take everything away from us and leave us with nothing. So that's point number one. Do you want to discuss it, or should we go on to point number two?
Let's go on to point number two, because I think that's an easy enough point for everybody out there to understand.
All right. And number two is something that I think everybody is painfully aware of. They have to control the financial system. And so it started with 1913, with the formation of the Federal Reserve, which led to the comment I made a minute ago about the fact that our interest on our national debt is four times greater than health care, education, and homeland security combined. So they systematically, the whole idea is you bankrupt the economy, and when you bankrupt the economy, you collapse it, and you can then reform it as a socialist communist society. So we have to understand that they're doing that. But now here's where it gets difficult. We won't go into it here. That's where you've got to get into the book. You got to understand how they collapsed it, step by step by step.
So we need to get rid of the Federal Reserve.
That's one of the things, but that's not something that's easy to do. That's why you have to do everything in a sequence. Getting rid of the Federal Reserve will be one of the most difficult things this country has ever done. And in the book, that is probably the only thing in my book that's complicated. And I'm not qualified to really do it. So what I did is I went to some top economists, and I used what they told us for why and how we need to get rid of the Federal Reserve. So I basically relied on absolute experts to cover that section of the book. But basically, Kennedy tried to get us out of the Federal Reserve. He passed Executive Order 11110, and I believe that's why he was killed, because if that had gone into effect, the Federal Reserve would have been put out of commission. And if you go back far enough, Andrew Jackson said that the biggest accomplishment of his presidency was getting rid of the second Federal Reserve that they were trying to impose on us at that time. But that's way, way down on our list, because that's going to be very hard to do.
Andrew Jackson did a lot of damage.
Oh, he did a lot of things wrong. But if we don't get the power, if we don't get the legislature cleaned out, get the rotten apples out of there, we'll never do anything as complicated as getting rid of the Federal Reserve. So that's
okay.
Way down the road. But so basically, we have to understand they're controlling the finances. The third thing is that we have to understand that through absolutely intentional losing trade policies, they've gutted our manufacturing system. They think the free market system is absurd, and they want to inflict communism on us. So if we understand that, then we have to understand how do we reverse it. And so the big thing there, this is one of the absolute must, but we can't do it until we get control of Washington. We absolutely have to pull out of NAFTA. We have to pull out of the World Trade Organization. We have to pull out of all free trade agreements, and we have to start funneling money into capital expansion to reignite the engine of our economy, to rebuild our manufacturing sector, because without that, we have no productivity. We're just a nation of poverty-stricken people. And so that is absolutely crucial. That's an absolute must if we ever again in the future hope to have a country that has any economic stability whatsoever. We can't depend on cheap goods manufactured in sweatshops in China. And that's going to be the hardest thing for people in terms of personal responsibility, is to say, are we willing to stop buying those cheap goods from China, and are we willing to do the hard things that are necessary in order to rebuild our manufacturing base here in this country? and that's very involved. So again, you got to go to the book, and you really got to get the meat. So because we're functioning at a high level, and then the next one is you have to understand that they intend to control the cost of our energy, and that's the cap and trade bill and of food, and they're doing basically we can look at 20% to 30% increases in our food cost, and that's partly because of all the money that they're printing. And they want to basically take control of everything that determines whether we can live or die. And we have to understand that and push back against that. And the next thing is the healthcare program. And it really was absolutely about the opposite of what Obama said. It's to control who lives and who dies, because, again, it's all about control of the government. And so one of the things we have to do, and maybe this is a point where we can stop, we may have a chance to reverse that one. Once we get the new Republican controlled House in sworn in, we can try to basically get defunding done on the health care program and possibly get defunding done on another one that will control our manufacturing sector, which is the finance reform bill, which is going to kill manufacturing because it's going to have so many onerous regulations in it that will make us non-competitive in the global market, and it'll just literally put the last nail in the coffin of U.S. manufacturing. So here's what we might do right now today, even before 2012 when we get control. If the Republican-controlled House will say we want health care defunded and we want the financial reform bill defunded, here's what will happen. Obama will veto it. If Obama vetoes it, then if the American people will scream and yell and shout to their legislators, and if the Republicans will stand, all they have to do is a tactic that's done every single solitary day in Washington. They then take those vetoed bills, and they take the defunding proposal for them, and they bury it in the one essential thing that every government in the United States has to have, and that's a budget. And so if they bury the funding for health care and for the financial reform package in the budget, Obama will be forced to pass the budget, and if he passes the budget, he'll be forced to defund the two most caustic pieces of legislature that have ever been imposed on the American people. So that's
okay,
something
so
we can do immediately.
What we're saying here now, first of all, we are in that entitlement phase, okay? And we're looking at socialism, we're seeing that entitlements and redistribution of wealth, as Obama speaks of, redistribution of wealth is not to help you, it is to control you. We're seeing that we have to pass the usury laws, we have to pass banking reform, and we have to defund these programs like health care, force them to put them in the budget, so he's forced to pass the budget, and that happens. So these are some things that people can do, even if they don't have an educational background in any of it. They can do these things. They can, you know, get people elected, and they can insist upon you've got to defund these programs, because that seems to be one of the mainstays here, is to defund the program to get us out of this hole. I had to kick everybody out that's in there right now and start all over again in 2012. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly right. And now there's two more points, and these are crucial, because the five I've just outlined, the government's effectively done them to us. So what we have to do is undo them. Here's the two that we have to put our immediate attention on. We've got every revolution that was ever successful in the world. Look at Venezuela. Look at Nazi Germany. Every time they had to control the media. If you control the voice and the ability of the people to communicate, you control their effectiveness to fight back against the government. So one of the things I want to warn...
That's WikiLeaks is for. Does anybody really think he can access that kind of information through some idiot going in there and finding it? No. This is obviously a government-controlled program to allow these leaks to gain control over the media. I see that as...
Exactly.
That's why they're not
going
to do anything.
And where it's leading is still a place that's very dangerous. They've come at us before and tried to take control of the media, in particular, try to take control of the internet. The Fairness Bill didn't pass, and now they're going to go after. They're going to use WikiLeaks as an excuse to push net neutrality. So one of the things that, again, this is something, folks, that we can do immediately. We can push back against anything that WikiLeaks causes in order to give the government an excuse to take over the internet and to further censor things like Fox News and to control the media. Because we lose the media. If we lose the media, we lose our voice.
Oh,
we lose our ability.
From this number? No, there was no call from this number.
Hello? Hello?
I had a call on the other line. Somebody said I got a call from this number. I said, no, I didn't call anybody from this number.
All right. So basically, if I try to recap that because I got distracted, basically we have to, if we're going to be successful in keeping this republic together, the two things we have to do right now is we have to push back against any efforts to control the media and control the internet. And then here's the last one, folks. What they want to do and what we can't allow them to let us do, the strategy that exists in every successful revolution is the government causes something like a WikiLeaks to happen. They let it be known that they're basically incompetent. They do it by choice. The unions push from the bottom, cause revolts and riots, and people rise up, and the people scream to the government, help us, help us, help us. And then the government comes in, clamps down, puts martial law in, and just like in Nazi Germany, you never come out of the martial law. You transition into a dictatorship. And so what they're trying to do is neutralize our military. They're doing it by budget cuts. They're doing it by making sure that most of our military are out in places around the globe and not here.
That's,
and they're doing it by giving Obama.
That's an excellent point, Larry. You transition to a dictatorship. It doesn't just happen. And did you know, I know we just got a couple of minutes left, but the Army launched an operation called Unified Quest 2001, where it's studying the implications of large-scale economic breakdown. And in October, the U.S. Marine Corps visited J.P. Morgan to study markets and economy. So the military is preparing for an economic collapse.
Well, what they're doing, their number one push for next year is they are going to have military exercises around the United States focused around the scenario that a collapse has occurred and how do they contain the American population who's risen up in civil disobedience. So here's my closing comment, because I know we're running out. If we allow things to happen in this country like are happening in Britain, like are happening in Greece, and we allow the agitators at the bottom, the union organizers and the community organizers, to cause such discord between us that we rise up into the streets, we're done, because they'll clamp down us with martial law. That's where we have to be very intelligent. We have to have a plan, and we have to work that plan. That's where I say it goes back to where I opened. You cannot retain this government unless you have a general understanding. We have to react at peace, and we have to push that.
What you're saying is people don't take to the streets. Don't riot. Don't do these things in an economic collapse. Sit back and effectively work on it. But if you do that, you're just going to push it harder. Don't lose your cool. Don't go out and do these things.
Absolutely. We do that, we're done. I have really, really studied and looked at the collapses of multiple governments and the successful rises of revolutions, and every time the trigger is they inflame the people to revolt, and when they do, then the government locks down on them and they never come out of it.
Okay, so
and
what
that's
we're
what
saying
trying
here,
to do to us now.
There's a deliberate inflammation here, a deliberate process of trying to inflame us to revolt so they can crack down on us. So people don't take to the streets, don't riot if there's an economic collapse, because that's what they want you to do. And you have to, it's going to go through the legislature, you have to work at it actively and intelligently, and you have to defund these programs to force those to go into the budget. You have to get your legislature to pass some of these laws. This is the only way it will work. It will not work to take control into your own hands and go out in the streets, because then they will call in the UN troops, and they will call in the military, and then they'll institute martial law. And, yes, you know, my past studies years ago in military strategy, dictatorship is a progression. It's a transition. One never just has a dictator. It is a transition into a dictatorship, and this is the way
yep.
it's always been. All of a sudden, you
and
have one. You think, where did it come from?
Yeah, it doesn't. It's not going to happen. It's just going to morph. And real quick, in order to kind of keep the promise I made, I'm going to run through some real quick bullet points, and we'll close. basically the first thing we've got to do is vote out all the Republicans, all the Democrats, get in new people that basically support the agenda that we have, so we can get all the special interest groups out and we have a chance to have the voice of the American people heard over the voice of the special interest groups.
So we're seeing 2012 is a very important election.
It's key if we make it that far. And here's some of the key things that we have to do. Get rid of NAFTA, get rid of the World Trade Organization, close our borders, because I could do a whole show on how insidious keeping our borders is. It has all kinds of agenda implications. We have to eventually get rid of the Fed, but that's way down the list of things we have to do. We have to reform the income tax, but again, that's way down the list. We have to get rid of a national usury law. We have to agree to cut spending. We have to do things to stimulate the investment in the capital segment of our economy. We have to cut military spending, and that's another whole show almost. We have to understand that we are a nation that is basically trying to run the world, and we can't afford it anymore. We have to cut that. And here's
so
the key. We have to reform the welfare program. And I'll start with
okay, so what we're saying is, don't let this overwhelm you and think that if you don't have, you know, an educational background that is, you know, that is impressive, don't let this overwhelm you. These are still steps you can do.
Well, I take it a step further, Dolly. When in the book, the title is it's got common sense solutions in it. So really all I did is I just went through, and I didn't give you a whole lot of boring history. I said, this is what this country was founded on, bang, 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 bang. This is what made it great. This is what made us the greatest nation in the world, and they have consistently stripped out this, and this, and all we have to do is put them back in place. You don't have to have 2,000-page legislative bills. You have to have common sense legislation. The only reason you got 2,000-page bills is because you want to take care of the special interest groups. So the answer is, it's common sense. It's so easy to understand. It's not funny, but you've got to have the big picture. That's why I've kind of avoided this.
Bring back some morality in your life, some type of religious spirituality in your life, so that you are not looking to the government for everything and looking outside of yourself. And I think it's 7 o'clock, and I think we're off. Mike, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, so I think at 7 o'clock, I think probably the on-live portion is done, and as always, I have to go. In fact, I have to edit pictures tonight for Big Ben, so I'm going to go, and I'm going to leave the two of y'all to talk about this on podcast.
We're still streaming. We started late, so I extended the show.
So, Larry, I want to thank you so much, and I'm going to leave you all go. And,
I don't know if we really answered the question that you wanted answered.
I think what we did was, because I know some people are overwhelmed with it. You don't have to be overwhelmed. You have to understand, you know, make them pass a usury law. Make them defund these programs. Make them put that in the budget. Okay, when they do that, then you're defunding the socialistic process, because socialism and saying that the redistribution of wealth is not taking care of you. It's controlling the wealth. So I think if people understand those basic concepts, and you presented it very well. If you understand those basic concepts, but not to take to the streets when this happens, because we are.
And as we leave and you get ready to go, if we're off the stream, could you try to call me tomorrow about that other topic we talked about today?
I certainly will. And that you also need to talk to Mike about that too.
Okay.
Okay.
Dolly, thank you.
Okay. I'll see you all later.
I'll talk to you later. I'll look for your call. I won't call you. I'll look for you to call me.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right.
So, Mike,
but I don't know if I'd ever go so far as stick rock cocaine up my butt.
Are
we still on?
Yeah, we're still on.
Okay.
What were you going
to
say?
Well, I don't know that I have anything else that I want to say. We didn't follow the agenda in the sense that it was just too complicated. That's what I've been trying to say to Dolly. If you try to rush through it and people don't have any frame of reference, it sounds complicated. But if you have the book in front of you and you read it and it's not written for people with a college education, it's basically once you get the concept of what made this country great and what they took away from us, then it's almost intuitive as to what we have to do to fix it. And it's really simple. All we have to do is say, Well, they took away our manufacturing base. Well, how did they do that? Oh, they imposed free trade on us. And, well, what do? We do the opposite. So we basically, all we have to do is just reinstate about a half a dozen key pieces of legislation and get control of Washington by getting the current people that are lifetime legislators out of there, and getting new people in who are willing to represent the people, not the special interest groups, and we can take it back. But basically, you know, how can we accomplish anything if we don't, as a group of people, understand what we're trying to accomplish? And that's what I was trying to say at the beginning of the show, is you've got to have a general baseline of knowledge, or else, you know, those four or five or six things that we talked about that are key, that's as far as you can go. But if you've got the big picture, because you've been willing to invest a little bit of time in educating yourself, now you're dangerous, because now you can see what the government's doing to you, and we can respond back. We can push back, and we're not going to be suckered into doing things that are not good for us just because the government, for example, you know, allowed WikiLeaks to occur. We're not going to go along with them and say, now, oh, gee, let's censor the Internet. And I don't think it's happenstance that all of a sudden, supposedly, in response to WikiLeaks, we have cyber attacks on credit card companies. That's a bunch of bull. That's basically creating the situation. Who is that? That's the big banks again. So the banks are basically pulling the strings, basically trying to get us to go along with agreeing to censor the Internet. Once we agree to censor the Internet, we've lost our communication channel between the 300 million people in America who need to be talking so that they can determine a strategy for how to push back against this government. And so we can't allow that to happen. We've got to safeguard the media at all costs, to the Internet at all costs, and we've got to make appeals to our people of the armed forces. And so as we finally go off the air here, I'll basically say that when whoever you are, if you hear this and you're in the military, remember that you swore an allegiance to the United States of America, to the republic for which it stood, and for our Constitution, and not to some communist socialist regime. And so, you know, if you're ordered to do something, I urge you, remember that these are your brothers and your sisters, your mothers and your fathers, that they be asking you to take up arms against and refuse to do it. So, Mike, are we off air now?
What's up there about that WikiLeaks?
Yeah, it's really a big, huge landmine that they put out there for us, and if we're not careful, we're going to fall right in that trap. And the next thing we know, we're going to have censorship of Fox News, and we're going to have censorship of the Internet. And when that happens, we're nothing more than what Venezuela did, and basically we're in trouble. We're in real trouble.
Actually, I never paid attention to that WikiLeaks, however you pronounce this stuff, because I just thought it was another jackass trying to make a name for himself, and that's actually still what I think.
Oh, no, it's very serious, because what it's done is it's given the government the opportunity to now to push and tell us, folks, we need to have net neutrality. We need to have control over the Internet. We need to be able to control cyber terrorism. And once we give that blessing based on what's been precipitated here by WikiLeaks, we then close down any freedom that we have left in terms of communication through the Internet and through the few communication channels that are left, Mike. So don't make any mistake. It's one of the most dangerous things that's ever been done to us in the history of this country. See, if we're down to the last two steps of this takeover. If they can take over the media and they can take over the military or neutralize the military, then they can impose martial law, and then they can clamp down on us, and we're done. And so what I'm trying to do is to say to the people, you know, you've got to stand firm against these last two bastions if we're going to have any hope of trying to keep this society civil and keep it from going into a dictatorship.
Well, as far as the Internet goes...
Pardon me?
No, we're still on the air. As far as the Internet goes... The Internet, since the Internet was not around when the Constitution was written, it kind of falls under the two categories of freedom of speech and freedom of press. So they really can't control the internet unless we let them. And actually, I know quite a bit about net neutrality. And net neutrality is, they're not just trying to censor the internet, they're trying to charge you money to use the internet is mostly what net neutrality is about, not the only thing. But they actually want to start charging you to to use the internet. Like when you go to sign up for an ISP, well, you got to pay for the internet. But then once you sign up for the ISP, they want to charge you to use sites like Google and Yahoo and just about any other site that's useful. And say you put your site up, Larry, LibertyCrusade.com. Well, unless you pay to have that site listed on Google and Yahoo, Bing, you know, all these other search engines and stuff like that, nobody's ever going to see your site. And that's how they're going to. With the social networks and stuff like that. Of course, Facebook has the money. The Twitter, believe it or not, as successful as Twitter is, as of last year, they had not turned a profit. I don't know if they've turned one yet. They started little ads and stuff like that. I don't know how that's doing. But after 2 or 3 years, they hadn't turned a profit yet. So
let me interject what you just said about net neutrality.
Sure.
So I want to paraphrase. There's more to it than that, but let's just stay to that one aspect.
There is more to it than that.
But let's just stay with that one aspect, and I want to show you the danger. Basically, let's use cap and trade for a second. What's cap and trade going to do? Cap and trade is we're going to see energy prices go up. They're already going up. Gas is going up through the roof. Food prices.
But you know why energy prices are going up? I mean, that's kind of a rhetorical question, saying it to you because I know that you know. But the reason the fuel price is going up is because somebody decided to print a whole bunch of money. And when you print more money, it deflates the value of the dollar, which causes inflation because you have when you decrease what the value of a dollar is worth, then it makes prices go up.
Deflation of the dollar causes inflation. What I want to do is have you look at the big picture. So the big picture is this, Mike. If they want to control us completely, then they can control us by basically making us unable to afford things. So if we can't afford beef, then one of the things they want to do is to cut beef production. They've accomplished that. If we can't buy as much gasoline, and they want to curb our use of gasoline, if they price it out of our reach, then they control that. If they want to control the internet, and they price it so that we can't afford access to the internet, they've effectively censured the internet. So basically, they come at us, and they always come at us with what sounds like, what's what I call a half truth. They come at us with something that they think, oh well, the reasonable person might go along with that. The reasonable person might say we have to protect against cyber terrorism, and so on and so forth. But the outcome is always the same. The outcome is we're going to lose our freedom of speech, we're going to lose our independence, and we're going to become totally dependent on a government. And when you become totally dependent on a government, you can only define that as a dictatorship. And that's what they're pushing us to, and they're doing it in a number of different ways. And so when you start
the biggest picture overall is the fact that when you say they, and a lot of people say that, they, the government, well, they are we. We are the government. And they cannot do any of these things unless we allow it, unless we let it to happen. And that's what we're doing. And that's what we need to – it's basically everything you said tonight. But, basically we need to emphasize the fact that people – well, you said that people need to get educated. Well, not educated doesn't go to college and, become a political science major, but become knowledgeable of what's going on. If they see something on the news that they can't, they don't completely understand, go look it up on, I don't even like Wikipedia that much, but go look on the internet. Just see what other people are saying about it. Go look at blogs and some forums and ask questions. Listen to radio shows like this, and if you don't understand what we're talking about, call in and interrupt us and say, hey, I don't understand what you were talking about, because we have a habit of doing that, not just you personally, but on this show, we have a habit of, talking about things and, not creating the foundation. You did a good job of that tonight. You did a good job of that tonight. But a lot of times we're just going on about, we're starting from the middle and going forward, and people are listening going, what the hell are they talking about? So, yeah, you know, if people are listening and you don't understand what we're talking about, call in and ask questions. You know, if we say something you don't agree with or you have something to add to it, you know, call in and make a comment. And, yeah, this is a government, it's by the people, for the people. This is our government. It's not their government. It's ours. It's, you know, and they can't do anything unless we allow them to do that. And by being ignorant and being just voting for the good-looking guy who has the best TV commercial, by doing that, we're allowing these things to happen.
But it has to go a step further than that, Mike. That's what I call reactionary. They have lots of money, and they have people who sit in think tanks and who have an absolute plan, and then if that plan doesn't work, they have a contingency plan, and they have a contingency plan for the contingency plan. And that's why I say the American people have to get informed, because if you don't understand what they're doing, at least those 7 points that I outlined, then you can be driven into participating out of ignorance in the very things that are going to harm this country and harm us as individuals and harm us as a nation. And one of the examples is if we allow them to use WikiLeaks in order to shut down the Internet or to control the Internet in any way, that we've allowed that to harm us, just like we allowed the stimulus to be used to harm us, because that money did not go to help the American people. That money went to bankers, and there was not even any stipulation on how that money had to be used. So they had told us they'd use it to jumpstart the credit. They didn't do that. The government didn't stipulate that. They paid billions out in bonuses to people, and they wrote off bad debts in order to basically dissolve themselves or absolve themselves of the bad banking practices that they had willfully, intentionally imposed upon the American people. So we have to have enough smarts to understand so that they cannot create these crises and then use these crises to drive us into things that are not in our best interest. And another example of that is every war that we've been in has been a war that the American people have been drug into by their leaders, and we haven't really understood what it was that was the agenda that was behind us getting into that war, and we've been used. So that's where I keep coming back and saying, you know, you've got to invest the time and the money into buying a couple of really good books where people have done like I've done, and you've taken years of their lives in order to consolidate the information, put it into a place where you can very quickly bring yourself up to where you're an informed individual who can intelligently participate in the electoral process that we belong to if we're part of a republic. And we've got too many people out there who are just too lazy, who won't take the time to get themselves informed. So that, I'll stop off of my pedestal. I want to ask you a question. If we're going to get off here, could you call me back a little later? I don't have your personal phone number. I have something I want to ask you offline, if you could call me a little later.
Yeah,
or call me tomorrow.
I can give you a call in a little bit. But, I just wanted to, you know, tell people that, yeah, it's not – with a lot of people, it's not that they don't care. They think everything's all right, and they just go by what they see on TV. You know, so it's not that they don't care. They're just not aware, and, you know, in a lot of cases. You know, in other cases, it's not complete ignorance. It's just, you know, some people really, you know, just in their day-to-day lives, they're happy and content, and they think everything's okay. And, you know, it is for right now, but, you know, if we don't wake up and, you know, get, you know, become aware and, you know, like, write to our congressmen and our senators and our councilmen and tell them how we feel, they're not going to know. So that's another thing that we really need to do, because we can come on these radio shows and go on our forums and our blogs and stuff like that, but we can do that all we want to, but 300 blogs and radio shows and YouTube videos, it would take more than that to equal one handwritten letter to your senator, your congressman, the president, a councilman, and, you know, whatever issues you're concerned with, sit down with a pen and a piece of paper and, you know, the envelope, the stamp, all that snail mail stuff. That is what they go by. They don't go by people bitching about things on the internet. They really don't. So, anyway, about your book.
That hopefully we play as we engender those people to pick up that pen or to pick up the telephone and to take that action.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, yeah, I'm just going to go over the chapters of your book. And, you know, everybody, this book is it's authored by Larry Ballard, our guest here tonight, who I'm talking to right now. The name of the book is Modern Slavery and the Fight for Freedom. It's available at his website, LibertyCrusade.com, and it's also available at Amazon.com. The links are on the Blog Talk Radio page here, blogtalkradio.com/MJH. And what this book goes into, okay, this book's about, what is it, Larry? Almost 300 pages, and it's very well outlined and informative. I'm in the process of reading it myself right now. But what this covers is Chapter 1 is the Seven Spheres of Influence. Chapter 2 is A Glimpse into the Future. Chapter 3 is America in History. And just Larry basically touches down on background, facts, what's going on in the government right now, things we need to be aware of. There's more information on the back of the book. I've never looked at the back page of your book before, Larry. don't ask me why. I just happen to do it right now. America was founded upon belief in a small, decentralized government based on laws, the Constitution, which where free enterprise is rewarded, where freedom of speech is, what's that word, Larry? Sacrosanct.
In front of me, public. What?
Where freedom of speech is sacrosanct.
Yeah, sacrosanct means vitally important.
Oh, vitally important there. Why don't you just say that? No, I'm just kidding. You authors and your big damn vocabularies. I can't read books like this without a dictionary next to me. Okay. So where taxes are fairly apportioned, where there is no secret proceedings and no special interest and are represented above the use of the people, and where the people have the right to bear arms as a last defense against a corrupt government. See, that I love that, because that's the truth. That's what the right to bear arms is all about. It's not to protect yourself from your neighbors, to protect yourself from your government if your government tries to control you, like gets out of hand, like back in the 1700s when at war with Britain. That's exactly what the right to bear arms is all about. And never have these beliefs and freedoms been more peril than the times that we are in, and all-powerful one-world government threatens to impose a global dictatorship and become the master of us all. So, yeah, everybody, this is a good book, and it's very informative, and you will be informed after you're reading this book, and you'll know what's going on in the government, and you can look at the news, and you'll be able to go, that's BS, or that's factual, or you'll be able to have the ability to form your own opinions, and that's what you need to do. Form your own opinions. Think for yourselves, everybody. Don't just watch TV and go, oh, hey, that guy looks good, and you know, I'd like the commercial. There's a lot more to it than that. Well, everybody, this has been Larry Ballard, the book we're talking about, Modern Slavery and the Fight for Freedom, available at LibertyCrusade.com and Amazon.com. Thank you very much, Larry. You've done another great show, you and Dolly both. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
All right. Later on, dude. He's a cool dude, ain't he? So, all right. That's the show for tonight, pretty much. And, I was listening to them, but also, you know what was going on? There's my favorite Christmas special on TV called The Year Without the Santa Claus, The Year Without a Santa Claus. And I had the sound down, but, you know, I was watching it. And, you know, I already know the story, and it comes on 15 times. You know, it's like, I'll get the chance to watch it again, not to mention you can get it on Amazon DVD. But I love this freaking song.
Below. Friends call me Snow Miser. I'm too much.
Oh, I'm too much, baby.
Too much. I never wanna know a day that's over 40 degrees. I'd rather have it 30, 20 than 5. Let it freeze.
Oh, go ahead, baby. Much too cold. Yeah, come on.
He's Mr. White Christmas. He's Mr. Snow. He's Mr. Icicle. He's Mr. Tensilow.
Friends call me
You have been listening.
I stopped the song right in the middle by accident. That's all right. We'll play it again some other time. All right, everybody. This is MJH. Peace. God bless. I'm out of here. We'll see you again next Tuesday with Reverend James Rife, Wednesday with Castor Senate, and back once again, Larry Ballard on Friday. All right, everybody. Have a great weekend. This is MJH, and I'm out of here. Later.
You have been listening to the MJH Experience on Blog Talk Radio.
Produced by CommunicationCreations.com.
Do you know where you're going to?